Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Summer is coming to a close and fall is fast approaching later this week, a time which typically kicks off flu season and for the past couple of years, COVID subvariants. This year also comes with an additional concern with the rise in monkeypox or mpox. As of this morning, there have been at least 4,500 confirmed or probable cases of mpox since the virus was first confirmed in California back in late May. Mpox cases are on the decline, but not before sharp criticism by some that the response has been slow, as well as the vaccine rollout. Well, as we head into the third fall of the COVID pandemic, a new booster is being rolled out, promising stronger protection. And of course, we're in the cusp of flu season. Some health experts warn the season could be severe for people who haven't built up a natural immunity over the last 2 years and begin to gather with others during the holidays. There's a lot going on. So to get a prognosis on where we are with all of these viruses, we've invited back Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you, Dr. Blumberg. So we're at a point in this pandemic where public health protocols like masking, required masking, social distancing, et cetera, have taken a backseat more so than ever before. Is this consistent with what you're seeing in terms of cases and patients?
Yeah, we really are. The cases have really dropped. I mean, our hospital admissions now for COVID, there's very few for COVID itself. Most of the patients who are being admitted to the hospital who are COVID infected, it's incidental infection. They're being admitted for another reason. So we're in a really good place right now for COVID. So that's we're fortunate in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple developments in just the last week. I mean, last night, President Biden said on 60 Minutes that, quote, the pandemic is over, although adding that COVID is still a problem and that they're continuing to work on it. This follows the World Health Organization, WHO, provided its most optimistic prognosis yet for the pandemic, stating, we're not there yet, but the end is in sight. Do you share this optimism?
Yeah, I think we're getting there. I mean, remember all the way at the beginning of the pandemic, how worried we were, and that's because nobody had immunity to COVID. So people were very vulnerable to infection, and that included severe infection. At this point in the pandemic, the vast majority of people have been either vaccinated or they've been infected or a combination of the two. So we do have some widespread immunity throughout the population. So now most infections that are occurring will not be that severe because of the previous immunity. Of course, immunity does wane over time, and we're still having people dying every day from COVID. So it's something that's still serious, but we're in a much better place.
When it comes to children and teenagers, what are you currently seeing in pediatric COVID patients that is similar or even different from previous points in the pandemic?
We're still seeing cases in pediatrics, in the pediatric age range. We're not seeing as much of the MIS-C, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome, in children. That seemed to be a feature more earlier in the pandemic. And we're certainly seeing the consequences of COVID, including long COVID in children, including especially in children who are teens.
The newest COVID boosters have just rolled out, and they have components of both the original virus as well as the Omicron strain to provide protection from both. What do you believe is either the most misunderstood or underreported aspect of these new boosters that we should all know?
You know, one of the really interesting things about these boosters is that the immune response, not only will they be fine-tuned to protect against the original strain and against current variants, but the broader immune response that's achieved with these vaccines likely is going to provide better protection against future variants. Mm. And so I think that's a real advance that we're going to see with the immune response to these vaccines.
Are there any new side effects or different side effects from this new booster?
All the side effects that have been reported with the bivalent vaccines have been very similar to those with other boosters or with the original vaccination. So I'm not expecting anything new.
We're a few weeks into the school year for a lot of districts, and many districts in the Sacramento region, they're strongly recommending masking indoors, but they're not requiring masking. Does the data currently support this? I mean, have you seen an uptick in cases with schools back in session?
We haven't seen an uptick in cases, and so we've been really happy about that. And we know that some students do continue to mask in schools and others don't. I mean, we can see this all in our everyday lives when we go to the grocery store, that really what I've been seeing is a minority of people are masking,
yeah.
And I'm included in that minority. I continue to mask. I've enjoyed not getting COVID, and I've also enjoyed not getting any other respiratory infections for the past few years. So those masks, they work really well against all respiratory infections.
Yeah. Do you recommend certain segments of the population continue to mask, or what is your recommendation since you mask when you're indoors?
Yeah, I still do recommend people mask when they're indoors, when they're in crowds, when they're with people who are outside their household. So if they're on any kind of transit, on a bus or a train or plane, they should be masking if they want to be protected. You're really in a captive space there, and you don't know the people around you, how infectious they might be or what precautions they've been taking. And then certainly if you have a weakened immune system or comorbidities or you're older than 65, I would definitely strongly consider masking in those situations also.
We're currently, I believe, in the fourth school year where there has been a part of a pandemic. What impact have you seen that masking has had on children? Because I remember early on there was a concern that this could impact development at such a formative age for some children.
Yeah, there were a lot of concerns about that because children, it's really important for them to be around other people and to see other faces and expressions, and it helps with language development. You know, however, the masking, I'm not aware of any good scientific information that has shown that the masking has really impacted that to an important degree. Some children may have fallen slightly behind with their language development due to masking in daycare and other areas, but then remember, when they're at home, their parents aren't masking when they're around them. So they have plenty of opportunities for normal language development and to catch up.
When should we consider getting this new booster? And should it kind of just be now like an annual shot, like the flu shot moving forward?
You know, it's hard to say with COVID compared to influenza. Influenza has certainly settled into a seasonal disease at this point. So we very rarely see transmission in the summer. And that's, you know, with really extraordinary circumstances. For example, when we first had H1N1 that developed in 2009. COVID has not yet settled into that seasonal pattern that we expected to. We still get development of new variants that sometimes occur during the summer. And the vaccination, you know, is not expected to last 1 year, that protection. So in terms of expecting just one yearly COVID vaccine at this point, I'm not 100% sure if we're there yet, but I do expect eventually we will see COVID settle into a seasonal disease, and hopefully we'll just get one shot every year.
I want to move briefly to monkeypox or mpox, because cases in the United States have been declining over the last few weeks. But during that same time period, the first confirmed death attributed to the virus in California was confirmed in Los Angeles County. Does this virus still pose a significant public health risk?
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, people can die from this, and there are other consequences too, such as brain inflammation or scarring or other problems that may occur. So it's still something to be concerned about. However, since late August, the cases have been decreasing, and we really haven't had a lot of vaccination out there compared to the number of cases that there are. So I don't think that this is in response to vaccination. It may be in response to the public health messaging that has decreased contacts among people who do have rashes and are potentially infectious. And then the original models that suggested that this outbreak would last between 3 to 5 months. And since it started in May, you know, that timing is just about right on. So we are seeing that decrease, and I'm really grateful for that.
Where are we in the scale up and availability of vaccines for mpox?
You know, at the beginning of the concern with mpox, we really had a very limited number of doses available in the U.S. that were really restricted in terms of their use.
They even thought about splitting the doses, right, to spread it out more?
And they did, yeah. So the two advances are that the manufacturer scaled up manufacture of the vaccine, and then they've been giving it intradermally, which gets a higher immune response. And so changing the way that the vaccine has been administered has been a way to stretch the vaccine doses without compromising with protection. And so now the vaccine is much more widely available. It was really restricted to certain high-risk groups early on, but now there's clinics at UC Davis, other healthcare providers, as well as public health. So anybody who thinks they should get a monkeypox or mpox vaccine, really talk to your healthcare provider and get a referral to one of the clinics.
All right. Well, let's focus our attention now on influenza, the flu. What's the current outlook for this season?
You know, a lot of times what we do is we look to the southern hemisphere to see what we're going to expect. And in Australia, it was a really terrible influenza season. Their season, of course, occurs during their winter, which is our summer. And they saw about a 60% increase in the number of cases that they expected. If you look at the average that they've had over the past 5 years. So I think this might be due to all the restrictions we've had due to COVID. People have not been exposed. A lot of people didn't get vaccinated. And because of that, immunity has really waned. And with people now out and about and interacting, you know, this has the potential to be a historically really bad influenza season in the U.S.
Yeah. What is your recommendation on when you should get a flu shot as well as a COVID booster? Can you get them at the same time, and should you?
Yeah, I do recommend getting them at the same time. You do get slightly more side effects if you get them at the same time. But you know, personally, I'd rather just get that over with rather than have them separate and have those side effects at two separate times. So I do recommend getting them at the same time. And the optimal time to get your flu vaccine is either late September or early October so that it does last through the expected peak months of influenza activity.
The CDC also recommends children 6 months to 8 years of age may need two flu shots. Under what circumstances would you recommend this?
Yeah, so the children at those ages, if they haven't been given flu vaccine in prior seasons, they need two flu shots to get a better immune response because they likely haven't been exposed to influenza disease. They haven't built up immunity that way or by vaccination. So those children should start their vaccination now, so that they can get their second dose by the time it's later in September, early in October. And then in addition, people who are pregnant, and especially those who are in the third trimester, should get vaccinated right away because pregnant women have a much higher risk of severe disease due to influenza, and influenza may induce preterm delivery too.
Is there a time during your pregnancy where it's more optimal to get vaccinated for flu or get a COVID booster, whether it's your first, second, or third trimester?
You know, whenever it's indicated is when it should be recommended. So certainly women in their third trimester should get vaccinated now, and everybody else should get vaccinated late September, early October.
And they can both get it concurrently as well. That would be your recommendation, flu and a COVID booster?
Yeah, you know, just that's me personally. I would rather just get it over with and just get them both done at the same time. But if people want to choose to do them separately, they can do that. But that's going to be side effects, you know, at two separate periods, plus the inconvenience of having to go to your healthcare provider to get those shots.
Yeah. Finally, we focused a lot on COVID, Mpox, as well as the flu. But are there any other viruses or diseases that are on your radar that we should keep in mind as we head into the fall season?
Well, there's always something, right?
So
there's
of course.
the CDC recently had an advisory about acute flaccid myelitis due to enterovirus D68 that causes a polio-like syndrome. So that's something that as pediatricians were on the lookout since this does primarily affect children. And then for COVID, you know, there's still other variants out there that are concerning. We're seeing an increase of variant BA4.6, there's 2.75.2. So there's other variants out there that we're keeping an eye on, and you just never know if they're going to develop into a real concern or if they're just going to fade away.
Yeah, still a busy time for you, Dr. Blumberg.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Dean Blumberg is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Up next, the rights of women in Afghanistan began to erode after the Taliban took over. And those who came to the United States have faced a new set of challenges. We'll head to the Central Valley and learn about a program helping Afghan women find a place of support. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.